Well, hello, hockey fans. Welcome back to Union Junction. It's been a few weeks, and we are excited to be back. And as you notice here, I don't have my normal co-host. I was able to somehow coerce our draft rankers, Matthew Zader, Peter Baricini is our draft head this year, and Andrew Forbes. And all three of our rankers are joining us this week to talk not only about the Blue Jackets, but we're going to talk about the NHL Combine, and we're going to take our first look at the NHL Draft. With the Combine this week in Buffalo, players have already started a process of meeting with teams. So myself, Peter, and Andrew are actually going to be on site in Buffalo all day Saturday covering the fitness testing, and that's going to be our chance to talk to the prospects. So this is the perfect time to get together and to kind of give you a first sense of what we're looking for. Gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So let's just jump right into this because there's a lot that we can talk about here. So Matt, I guess let's start with you and we'll just kind of go around. The Combine, there's obviously storylines that are to be followed. What are the storylines that you're looking for after this league? Like, what are you excited to see unfold? You know, things like that.
Well, biggest thing is that happening. I mean, last couple drafts, when I covered it and was the head of the prospects coverage last year, I didn't have that added bonus to be able to have that part of the coverage and part of the stuff, because it adds a lot of information. The interviews that we kind of glean from that, the different fitness testing, which does help a lot with when you're looking at stuff. And we'll talk about that later on too. It helps quite a bit in how we find out about these prospects. So that's my biggest storyline, is just finding, having that source of information this year when compared to other years. So I'm excited. I mean, even though I'm not attending like you three are, but it's going to be fun to see what comes out of this scouting combine for sure.
Peter, what are you looking for?
I kind of like Matt, just soaking in the experience. I mean, obviously the storylines going in, some of the OHL players, see how they're good. I mean, we saw how well most of them rose to the occasion this season because of the fact that there was no season in 2020-21. So the fact that we got to see OHL players play, the fact that we're going to see the conditioning stints and the tests that they're going to be going through, it's going to be fun. But even just interacting and getting a little bit on a personal note with some of the prospects too, because this is going to be the next wave of the top prospects coming into the NHL. A lot of big names, a lot of top prospects, and especially, a lot of question marks, talking about Shane Wright. Is he still going to be number one? We want to see how well he can be physically. Yuri Slavkovsky, he's the one coming in at number two possibly. So we're going to try and get a gauge on if they're evenly matched and if the, fitness testing says one player is better than the other otherwise, but then again, really shouldn't come down to just that. But yeah, a lot of topics, a lot of storylines coming out, and I'm just excited to just be a part of it as well.
And Andrew, this, me and you have been at this event for several years when they had it. We always get different things. What is it that you're going to try to glean out of this year?
I think first off, you're going to look for the funny storylines, the fun ones that you can kind of joke about, the which prospect's going to do zero chin-ups, who's going to puke after the VO2. All the fun stuff, right? What were the toughest questions? But I think the biggest thing that we've gotten in past combines is that, personalities of these prospects, right? You get a feel for who these kids are, what teams are looking for. As Peter mentioned, Shane Wright going into this season was the designated number one. And now there's some speculation that, maybe people are teetering towards Slavkovsky, right? So you get to know these guys at a young age where they're not making the big bucks yet. They're going in and they're fighting for every little bit that they get, and they want to be the top dog. So I think that's the storyline that, you're looking for going in.
All right. So you mentioned the question. I'll just throw a question that's been asked in the past just to get a quick rapid fire. Like, what would you say to this just off the top of your head? And the question is this: if you were a goalie, would you rather stop the puck or make a save? That was a legit question asked by teams of some goalies. What are your thoughts?
Are you throwing it to me?
Anybody.
I'd rather make a save. Because I think, you know, if you're a big body, if you're one of these big 6 foot five, you know, 200 pound goalies, you can be in the net and you can stop a puck. But when it comes down to it, winning championships, winning the Stanley Cup, winning playoff rounds, you need to be able to make the save and you need to be the guy that teams are counting on. So to me, I would say that you need to be able to make the save.
There you go. That's a great answer. Some other questions, and I wrote about this in the Combine preview, which is on the Hockey Writers, if you want to take a look at that. Which Marvel character would you want to be and why was asked of prospects. A couple years ago when, and I know that a couple of our Leafs writers who follow, you know, Rasmus Sandin, this was during the height of Fortnite. And so he was asked about how would you be in Fortnite? And he said, well, I won't be the one that's hiding in the bushes. And that was one of the best answers that anybody's ever given.
He's going to be full on running gun. He ain't hiding in the, you know, the towers and the bushes or anything like that. He ain't building stuff. He's going straight into the action.
He's going, and that's what teams are trying to glean. So we'll get a sense of what questions that are going to be out there. I'll give you guys a thing that I look for. You know, I've gone ever since the McDavid draft to this event, and you got to understand who's going to be there. All the teams are going to be there in one way or another. You're going to have a lot of big media. So you're going to have TSN, Sportsnet. You're going to have all the big guys. You're going to have a lot of the beat writers, especially those near the top of the draft, are going to be there. This is the opportunity to talk to them, see what kind of a feel they have, because there's always chatter. And I'll tell you, the one story that I know, I think this was at the Combine. I was waiting for the elevator. The elevator got there and there were two guys talking. You could tell that they were team representatives. When the elevator door opened, they were talking. As soon as they saw me and I was a member of the media, you should have seen how quickly they shut up, more or less. Because they were talking about stuff and it kind of clued me in on something, on some potential buzz, and it turned out to be true of all things. So actually being there to hear the buzz, to hear the chatter, whether it actually comes true or not, there's a lot. You get the trends. You get to see who's kind of going up, who's going down. So a lot of fans look at it as just fitness testing and interviews and stuff like that. But we start to really get a sense of how this draft could go as a result of this combine because of just who all is there. So that's what we're looking forward to.
Yeah.
So let's jump to the next question. So Peter, I'll start with you on this. I know all three of you guys do a great job on the Hockey Writers. You have your set of rankings that come out. I know, Peter, you have a May ranking. I think, Matt, you had an April ranking. I know, Andrew, you had some rankings done before. So this combine, when you take a look at your rankings and you constantly evaluate them, can the combine dramatically affect how a player rates to you? Like, can they go dramatically up or down, or maybe just a little bit up or a little bit down? Just give us your mindset for fans to understand what goes into your rankings and how the combine affects that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to put too much weight into it because there were times where, you know, I think even when you're Sam Bennett, he didn't do particularly well in terms of, like, you know, bench press or something like that. And he still managed to get drafted pretty high, top five. Granted, it didn't quite work out for him in Calgary, but he found his footing in Florida. So I think maybe you shouldn't put too much weight into it, but it does weigh a factor. I think it's a lot, all even levels of, you know, on ice performance, competitiveness, work ethic, you know, maintaining your physical stature, maintaining your strength. And this combine is going to determine who's going to be a top peak physical performance, because you want a person that's going to be, or a player that's going to be at the best, who's going to compete, and he's going to have that stamina every single time he's out on the ice and performing to his standards. And I mean, I'm not going to put too much stock into it, but it's going to be a factor one way or another. And even if someone doesn't do particularly well, we've seen enough of a player to kind of get that gauge of, you know, how he's able to perform on the ice. Granted, it is the junior level. You want to try and see him at the senior level and see what he can do against better competition. But that comes with the development, that comes with the mindset of the players and the factor that they're going to be, you know, focused and dialed in come draft day after they're selected. And then that's when the real work starts.
Andrew, does this affect your rankings much at the end of the day?
If you're talking about the top 20, I don't think it affects it that much. I think where it's going to affect is when you get into, you know, bottom part of the first round, second round, third round, and, you know, whatever kind of prospects you have, right? Like you mentioned 86 prospects are going to be there. So you're talking about middle of the third round. I think that's where you're going to see the major changes, if any. Again, I'm going to jump back to the personality. I think that's what makes the difference. When you're talking about the actual, like the testing, yep, it's not going to change it in a big way. Mm-hmm. What I think is the major part of this weekend or this whole week is the team interviews. Teams are getting to know the players. Players, you know, can kind of get comfortable with some of the team, the management, understand what they're looking for. And, you know, I think that's where teams are going to look back after an interview and say, you know, he was maybe high on our list at first, but we're going to go back and look at it again because, you know, that interview didn't go as expected.
And give you the last word on this, Matt.
Well, I'm on what Andrew's saying. You know, personality is huge, and you know, character and all that stuff is massive when you get into the end at the higher levels, and that can get you going even if you don't have the highest, you know, strength in something else physically. Your personality and how you carry yourself in the dressing room, leadership, all that stuff can come through those interviews, right? So you get to know the person behind the player, and that's a huge thing in my opinion. So definitely on with that. And like I said, you know, with the fitness testing, it does help, you know, it does change a bit. I mean, you're seeing guys that maybe, you know, are stronger than you thought. I mean, you know, you see their size and, you know, there's been taught, you know, throughout the season that maybe they're not the strongest in certain areas. And now you see the fitness testing. Well, maybe they have some potential in that, you know, in a certain area. So I think you can get things from both, but I definitely would rank a guy higher if you find out a bit more about his personality that you didn't find out throughout the season normally.
Yeah, and I'll just say real quick, I think it matters when you have very similar players anywhere in the draft. So like if you're sitting there in, say, in Philadelphia's position, and you have a choice between Juracek and Nemec, and you have an opportunity to interview both of them, and one, let's just say one comes out a whole heck of a lot better than the other, whether it be based on the interview, whether it be based on the fitness testing. I think when you're tied, that moment could actually alter how someone's final list ends up. And so you do that at all points, and yeah, you, I guess, call it your tiebreaker, because every team looks for something different. You know, some teams do value, as I can tell you for a fact, the Blue Jackets absolutely look at the fitness testing results. That's, they actually have part of their team where it's their job to actually utilize that in doing their evaluations and coming up with their lists. And then they have other team players that do other things, such as, you know, the leadership and the interviewing and things like that. But then they have their guys that actually go through and watch all the different fitness testing. So every team, it's real interesting to know, like, what makes a team tick, what they like to look for. And I do think for the teams, it certainly can break ties. And that's another thing to definitely look for when it comes to this. I want to go back to what Matt said a minute ago, because it's a good segue for the next thing. And Andrew, I'll start with you on this. And it's the heights and weights. It's something that we at the Hockey Writers do every time we've been at the combine, usually on Saturday night, we're able to drop them because we're right there. We have access to being able to see the heights and the weights as they go across. But at the end of the day, how important is that? We're talking about the size, you know, everybody needs that muscle and strength and different things like that. So if you see a prospect gain 10 pounds from what we know, or maybe they grew an inch or two, are we talking about that could be a dramatic difference if there's a significant change, or does it really not matter that much? I mean, where's the whole size argument come in here?
I'll first say, like, in past years, I know you've done a great job of reporting that side of it. And I think it's important to do that because there is so much discrepancy on, like, you know, if you go from elite prospects to, you know, say the NHL website or what have you. But in that sense, I'm going to kind of roll off of what you were saying about the combine itself, and where it matters is maybe if there's a tie between two players in terms of their skill set and what they offer a team. You know, maybe some guy comes in at 6'5" versus a guy that comes in at, you know, 5'11", 180, and a guy is 6'5", 210. Yeah, of course, size might make a difference. I think that's a lot of the size talk, though, has gone out the window. I mean, perfect example is a guy that you watched for years, Mark, in Alex DeBrincat. And what he's been able to do at the NHL level is just unbelievable. Mitch Marner in Toronto, another guy that, you know, certainly not the biggest guy on the ice. And it's all about puck possession, right? It is a different game. And that being said, you still need a little bit of size when you get to the playoffs. And I think, you know, teams do still look at that, but it's not nearly as important as it once was.
Matt, what do you say about the whole heights and weights thing? And does that matter when it comes to your rankings or your view of players?
Well, everyone knows that watches Prospect Corner, and I love the undersized players because they always seem to surprise people. And like Andrew said, it's not much of as big of a thing that teams kind of, you know, they still love, there's still teams that love their size. They love the guys that are big 6'5" guys. But the undersized guys have surprised so many times. And, you know, the heights and weights, like Andrew said, it does matter when, you know, with the tiebreaker things, you know, if guys are coming in at certain, you think is a guy's 5'10", whatever, and then they come in at 5'11", all of a sudden they're a little taller and they have a bit more weight to them. They're like, well, maybe that changes a bit. You think, oh, maybe they're stronger than we think. So, yep. It does change if there's a significant difference. I don't know if it really will jump like a guy from 10th to 5th. It's not going to make that big of a difference, it definitely is something to look at if there is significant differences.
Can Peter give you the final word on the heights and weights?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at two, I mean, Andrew already brought up Alex DeBrincat, but two other players that were probably smaller in their draft year that went, you know, third round that are, you know, NHL stars right now, and Braden Point and Jake Guentzel. Both are under 6 feet, both just 180 pounds. Braden is 183, and they were probably a lot smaller during their draft year. And that's probably maybe why they slipped down. But the fact that they're able to compete, they have the strength, they have the IQ and awareness that makes them high-end elite level players, that's going to be the difference maker. And if you have a 6'2", 200-pound defenseman, and he can play a high-octane game just like a 5'10", 170-pound winger, then so be it. To me, again, it doesn't matter about the size of a player. It matters to compete, the quality, and the skill set that they have. And not only that, the skating. The skating is always important. Mm-hmm. If they're able to keep up, if they're able to maintain the pace, that's going to be important, because we've seen in the past how 6'5" defenders pivot and get beaten out by guys much smaller than them that are 5'10", 5'11". So to be honest, it really shouldn't put too much stock into the whole weight aspect. I mean, before, like, you know, I got into writing and scouting and everything like that, like when I was a younger kid, obviously I'm like, oh, this guy's not going to make it because he's smaller. But then again, I was a young kid, I didn't know any better. But at the same time, you know, as you grow, as you learn the game, as you see what's happening and you see the trends, it doesn't matter if you're 6'2", 5'11", 200 pounds, 180 pounds. If you can play the game at a high pace and quality game that teams are looking for the game right now, it shouldn't matter about the size or height.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wait, sorry.
Yeah. Understood. Now, agree with all that. The only thing I'll add to wrap this conversation up is I do think that it gives you a sense of the progress somebody has made. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you're not looking at it necessarily from a, oh, they're not going to make it standpoint. You know, these guys are great. They got something to bring to the table, of the fact that they're at the combine. But I do like to know, because a lot of them, you know, they admit themselves, I need to get stronger, I need to hit the gym, I need to do this. That at least gives some perspective. Like if they're listed as maybe 170 on all the sites that we see right now, they come into the combine, all of a sudden they're 180 pounds. Oh, hello, that's a 10-pound progression. So that's telling me you've put the work in. So the evidence is sitting there for us. And, you know, might not be true in every case, but there are certain cases, like some of those undersized guys, if they put on 10 pounds of muscle, that's a hard worker. That's somebody that I probably want to have on my team. So another way to look at it. But before we go on to the last part of our show, we have a few more questions here. Remember, we talk about on Union Junction all the time, make sure that you sign up for the MorningScape, morningscape.io. And these three can tell you, is packed full of information. Delivered to your inbox every morning. Great way to wake up, grab a cup of coffee, open your email, read the MorningScape. Really good stuff out there. MorningScape.io, also on the hockeywriters.com. Make sure you sign up today. So Matt, we're back to you here. Got a few more questions to go through. And the big debate seems to be Shane Wright, right? So this was dubbed to be his draft year. It was his draft. And he had the interview at the draft lottery. Seems like that the Montreal Canadiens are going to go that way. But now all of a sudden, we got some rankers, you know, out there that might say that Jurid Sikorski is the one that's going to be possibly going number one. So what, I think it's safe to say that all three of you have Shane Wright number one still. But what are the reasons that you, because I think there's some fans out there that see Sikorski, you know, and the performance they had, it's been really good. And they see that Shane Wright had a down season by what many expected him to be. What are the reasons that you pin on Wright's season? And, you know, how concerned should anybody be?
I we've talked about this multiple times on different shows, and I've been asked the question quite a bit too. And You know what? I think Shane Wright, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he progresses next year. If he doesn't make it to the NHL, you know, right away, which I don't think he will. I don't think he should. How he does in his next year in junior. I mean, he had a decent season. It's not like he had a bad season, but yeah, when you compare what Slavkovsky's done at an international level, what he did the Olympics, what he did at the, you know, under 18s, and, you know, at the World Championships just recently too, he's been amazing. And how mature he is. And I mean, you look at his size and you look at his skill. I mean, It's a big thing to, and that's why it's kind of pushed up. I thought Logan Cooley was going to be the guy that was going to push more on Shane Wright, but in the end, you look at the position that Wright plays, and centermen like him don't come along every day. And you draft a centerman, wingers you can get quite a bit, even at Slavkovsky's level. But I can definitely see why Slavkovsky's has pushed that first overall discussion so far, because he's been every bit as good as what a first overall pick could be. Mm.
Now, Peter, what goes into your mindset when keeping Shane Wright on the top line?
I think you just got to go back to his rookie season and the way that he played and led Canada as an underager at the U18s. It was tough to see him not have the start that he wanted, but he finished strong and he had 94 points. And what I saw in terms of his underlying numbers, he has the best even primary points per game among players in the OHL. And even the best even strength primary points per game. And that's from pick 224. Great site, by the way. I mean, it's tough because you want to see him progress. You want to see him play better. But he had 94 points. And, you know, McDavid had 99 in his sophomore season. And granted, you know, McDavid is on a whole nother level. He's a generational player. He had 99 points. Missed a few games as well with 56 games played. And Wright missed only about five and he still had 94 points, and he dealt with a little bit of inconsistencies. I think it's a matter of like teams just a mix of like cluing in on how he plays versus how he used to play. Cause in when he entered the OHL, he was an absolutely offensive dynamo. And even at the U18s, he was just a lights out good. So to say that he doesn't have the compete level, he doesn't have the attitude or whatever, it just doesn't make sense to me. Because you saw what he did in his rookie year. You saw what he did at the U18s. The fact that, you know, this year you would have expected him to be a bit better. But then again, maybe not everyone was great as we thought we would hope they would be because of a missed season. Because they're still trying to find their footing. I still think Shane Wright has that ability to be number one in an impactful center. Maybe not 80, 90, 100 points, but a solid 60, 70 two-way center. And the fact that he has the IQ and the smarts already, that's hard to teach at his age. And the fact that he has that going and the compete level, to me, that should solidify that. But Slavkovsky himself, I mean, he's just an animal. I consider him a bully every single time he's on the ice, the way that he drives to the net and plays that power forward game. The fact that he's pushing right, rightfully so. But the two-way, for me, the tie goes to the fact that you can't win without a two-way center or like a very decent centerman. And Shane Wright is that.
Rightfully so. Don't think we missed that. So Andrew, give you the last word on Wright versus Sikorski.
So first I'll say I would love if Montreal decided to go with Slafkovský, because I think it creates a conversation that we'll be having 10 years down the road, the whole Matthews line A debate that continues, even though Matthews has done what he's done. It's going to be a constant conversation. That said, I mean, I don't think there's any question that Wright goes first overall. To the points that these gentlemen made, as well as the fact that, you know, Peter touched on a little bit, but there's been two seasons of OHL hockey that has not been normal. Mm-hmm. And it really, I mean, these athletes are creatures of habit. When you disrupt their habit, all of a sudden things change a little bit. So that's not taking anything away from Shane Wright's game. It's not saying that the competition has gotten better. It's the fact that, you know, he needs to get his footing back under him. He needs to have that regularity. He needs to have that normalcy. And I think we're going to see a Shane Wright that comes out and is going to be a force at the NHL level. I mean, there's a reason why he is where he is, and it's his work ethic. It's his personality. It's what he brings to the dressing room and the ice surface on a nightly basis. And I think to doubt that just because of a slow start after 2 years of up and down pandemic hockey, I'm not buying it. I think if you don't take Wright first overall, you're going to be looking back and wondering why you didn't.
Yeah, there was another cancellation this year for another 2 weeks when everything was shut down as well. So that probably affected everything even more.
Absolutely. And I'll give you the lesson. So in McDavid's draft year, when every general manager and every scout was coming through Erie to watch him, we got to talk to Peter Chiarelli when he was the Oilers general manager at the time. And we flat out asked him the question, would there ever be a situation that you'd consider anyone other than McDavid number one? And he infamously said to us that we have not decided yet, blah, blah, blah. That's code for McDavid was always number one on his list. And unless, I think the same thing here, unless there's a real change of heart, I agree with all you guys. I think Wright still has to be number one. I get that some scouts, you know, saw the recent performance and see the overall tools of Slafkovský, but if you're Montreal, like Andrew said, and if you pass on him, boy, you got a lot of explaining to do in 10 years if he turns out to be everything that he's meant to be. So
I feel bad for all the fans that pre-ordered or already got their right Habs jerseys, if that's the case.
Oh my God. No refunds or exchanges, right?
Is that two for two now, right?
There you go, right? So, Peter, we talked about some of the top guys. Now, there's obviously going to be 86 prospects that are scheduled to be in Buffalo for this combine. Can you give us an example of a player or two that might have the most to gain at the combine?
I want to say Rucker McGroarty, mainly because of the fact that, you know, he was supposed to be, again, heading in even last year, I think he was visioned to be a top 15, top 10 even prospect. And even so, he's slowly fallen down the depth charts, and you saw what he was able to do. Maybe he wasn't the standout player that many would thought he would be on the under or on the national development team. He goes in, dominates the U18s, and he still sort of trickled down the depth chart or like the rankings when, you know, Logan Cooley is still number one, Cutter Gauthier and Isaac Howard, rightfully so because they deserve it, moved ahead of him. But the fact that he has the size, the speed, the strength and everything like that, I think if we get to see more of that power and what he's able to do off the ice with this conditioning, I think this will benefit him well because he already has the tools to be a power forward. I mean, we already saw his release and what he was able to do at that tournament. It was just absolutely bonkers with the angles that he was shooting at and just absolutely lighting the lamp. I think that he has a really great chance to try and not necessarily move up on final rankings because they're already happening right now, but make a final impression on the scouts that, what happens on it, or like the way that my performance on the ice maybe hasn't been great, I still could put in the work ethic off the ice.
Andrew, is there a player too that you kind of have your eye on as the most to gain?
Yeah. And I took this guy in the mock draft over the Hockey Writers for Arizona, Bryce McConnell Barker.
Yes.
For me, like, at the beginning of the season, I would have said he's a borderline first round pick. Like, he's a guy that had the potential to be up there. again, I think disruptions in the season, not really getting his footing under him, consistency plagued him a little bit, but he's a guy that, I mean, he's coming from a London Junior Knights organization that, you know, has produced some pretty incredible NHL talents. I think he's a guy to watch. And I think, you know, if again, it's going to come down to his interviews. I think the interviews are going to be what really allows him to kind of let people know who he is and what he can bring to a team. But he's a solid built kid, and he's got a lot of high end skill, and it's just going to come down to what he offers. You know, I think the testing might be one. He'll be one player that the testing certainly helps.
Mm. And give Matt the chance to say one or two players that you have your eye on that might have the most to gain.
Well, I'm going to go with the DeGirogarden four. And you know, Kalle O'Dellis, Noah Osland, Liam Ogren, and Jonathan Lekaramäki, just because they, you know, this will be the first time in North America being seen by all these scouts and being able to interview them. And, you know, they're all guys that are going to probably be drafted in the first round. O'Dellis maybe the second, but these are all, and I'm going to throw in like all the European prospects, because the same thing. I mean, this will be the first time teams are going to be able to, I mean, not saying they haven't, you know, talked around, you know, the European scouts and stuff, but be able to talk them one-on-one and seeing what their personality is along with their skill. I'm going with those. I'm going to have four in there, but they're all going to be guys that are going to be heck of a, you know, players in the NHL and all super skilled. But I think the biggest thing is they're going to gain a lot for their personalities in this combine.
Hmm. And I will give a couple of names here, and I think you guys will obviously know the pattern here. So I'm going to say Brennan Ollie. I'm going to say Jack Hughes. I'm going to say Sam Rinzel. Let's see if I go through the list here. Who else is falls on this pattern? Michael Fisher is another one. I've named high school players. And so the reason that I bring them up is because I'm always interested to see the guys that kind of – that are not the OHL players, that are not the international players that play in some of the bigger leagues. I think these guys, especially, I think Rinzel's a very interesting player for me because he already has the NHL frame. And I know a couple of you have mentioned that he's kind of like Scott Morrow was last year, but this is an opportunity for them to not only show their personality, go through the interview process, but to show that where they've played, you know, in high school is just as legit as some of these other bigger leagues too. So they think it really, they have a lot to gain here by, you know, making an impression. If they do well in the fitness testing, and if they do well with an interview, I think it opens the eyes of some teams and, you know, for them to be able to get their opportunity, even though they haven't played, you know, Rinzel's eventually going to end up in college and these guys are ultimately going to go down the college path. So it seems, but the fact that they're only playing in high school right now, they might get lower because they haven't played as much competition. I think they have a lot to gain. Just my two cents. So we'll start with Andrew on this last question before we get to our rapid fire segment. So it's a similar question, but it's a little bit different just because it's going to come down now to your preference. So who is your favorite player that's rated outside of the first round that deserves attention at the combine?
I'm going to go Kalle O'Dellis. I know Peter's been high on this guy for a while. We've had conversations about this guy. I know, you know, Peter would love to see him in some blue and white at some point down the road. So I just think like he's a guy that's for me is a little underrated. I think there's a high potential that he could go late in the first round just based on what he's shown. Really great puck mover, high skill, just sees the ice very well. His hockey IQ is, you know, above average. Really, I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's able to do in opening the ice for his teammates. And I could see him going maybe like 30, 31. And, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise to me, to be honest.
All right, Matt, your favorite player outside of round one that deserves attention, and we're going to say no duplicate answers.
I'm going, well, this is, again, part of what I like in players is that is undersized. So I'm going to go Lane Hutson on this one. And you know, he's one guy that I actually got into a little bit of a back and forth on Twitter about with a former writer of the Hockey Writers, Jack Dawkins, who covered some of the draft last year with the profiles. And we were talking about Lane Hutson, and he's saying that, you know, he doesn't think he's too undersized for the NHL. And I said, you know what? The only undersized guys have surprised. And I think he's got the tools. I mean, he is a smaller defenseman, but he's so dynamic. And I, you know, watching clips of him, he really reminds me of Quinn Hughes. And, you know, the hockey IQ, the skating, the edges, and the way he can move the puck through the neutral zone. And he just reminds me a lot. I mean, maybe not as a high end as Hughes has turned out to be and where he was drafted, but I think you're going to see a lot in him in the next few years. And we're going to see how he does the fitness testing, and a lot of that will come out. But I've really liked watching Hutson this year and the clips and video I've seen of him. So Hudson's my pick for a guy you have to keep an eye out at this combine.
And Peter, what about you?
I have two, one from both North America and Europe, because on Central Scouting, they're both kind of ranked outside or would be projected to be in that late first, outside the first round. And first one is Ryan Chesley. I absolutely loved his two-way game, his ability to replace, make pinches up, but he may not get involved offensively, but he does, or he may not find the score sheet, but he does a great job to keep plays alive. He's strong, he's sturdy, he's got great defensive awareness. I've always loved this play, and, you know, the fact that he's ranked 18th, maybe he's outside of that first round, according to Central Scouting, but I have him in my first. And another player that I have in my first that's outside is Noah Oslin. Again, absolutely dynamic with the way that he controls the pace of play, slick puck handler, crafty with the with his hands and movements. May not have the notoriety compared to Lekkerimäki, Ogren, and even Adelius, but I think he's risen, or he should be rising up a lot of boards, because he has the skill set and the mentality to be a fantastic play driver, and teams should take note of that.
I've got two to put a bow on this. And I'm going back and forth still on who my steal of the draft is going to be. Watch out for that in the month of June as part of our draft features at the Hockey Writers, and make sure you hit our draft guide. Everybody does it, doing a great job. We hope to have well over 180 profiles by the time that we're done with this. Features, profiles, you name it, top 10 lists, mock drafts, it's all in there. HockeyWriters.com 2022 NHL Draft Guide. So with that said, Nick Moldenhauer is somebody that I think is vastly underrated. Yeah. If you look at his story, I mean, it's actually an incredible story. He went from an OHL first round pick to being hospitalized twice, to almost having his hockey career end because of a skate blade to the face. And the fact that he was able to come back to the USHL and be a point of game player. You know, that's dedication, that's battling. And he's got he's got skating and skill to boot. Mm-hmm. And I think just his story where, you know, he's underrated, because I think a lot of the rankers out there kind of see him as a second round pick, a third round pick. I had him as a first round pick going into the year. So that, to me, is a steal. And the other one I'm going to give you guys is Christian Kyrou.
Yeah.
I've seen him all year in Erie. Mm-hmm. Such a good shooter. And he went from 0 points to the pandemic erasing a year of his to being a 60-point player as a right-shot defenseman quarterbacking the power play. I mean, not quite the skater Jordan is, but he does so many other things well. And if he continues to produce defensively, you'd see that improvement. He's going to be a really, he's rated to go second, third round as well. And that's kind of where Jordan went, was a second round player. I think some teams are overlooking him, and if whoever grabs him, I think is going to be really good. And I think he's got a lot to prove at this combine as well. So let's put an end to this show. We're going to do a rapid fire. So fans of the top 16 here, if you have a lottery pick, we're going to go real quick. I'm going to name the team, and I'm going to ask the rankers to go forward and say who they think that team might pick. So Matt, I'll start with you. I think it's going to be easy for the first couple, but we'll start with Montreal. Who do you think goes number one?
Shane Wright, 100%.
Any disagreement?
No.
New Jersey Devils. Peter.
Yeah, I'm going Juraj Slafkovský, mainly because as much as I want to see a center depth of, you know, Hughes, Heischer, and Cooley, and even Dawson Mercer, they're set up the middle to have a possible top line of Slafkovský, Hughes, and Alexander Holtz. That's going to be pretty fun.
Any disagreements? That's pretty unanimous. Andrew, Arizona Coyotes, third.
Logan Cooley. I took him in the mock draft, and I'll take him here. I think center depth is definitely an organizational issue with Arizona right now, and Logan Cooley would be the best option at number three for the Coyotes.
Any disagreement between Matt and Peter?
Nope.
No.
So the Arizona Coyotes need centers, left wingers, right wingers, defensemen, goaltending.
Everything.
So we pretty much agree that because it's Cooley, because he's a center and that's kind of the preferred position, that's where you got to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That seems to make a lot of sense. Here's where I think things get real interesting. Seattle Kraken number four, Matt.
Simone Nemitz. I mean, you got to go the defenseman that's the best, and he's been the best for a while now in this draft. So, and the Kraken need, again, there's another team that needs a lot of stuff, and defense is definitely one of them. Right-hand shot, I mean, you can't go wrong with Nemitz here.
Any disagreement from Peter or Andrew? I might lean Juracek. That's just me, though. They're real close, but I agree with the premise that they need a defenseman. I think if it goes the way that I think, four and five are both going to be a D, and that's Philadelphia is fifth. So, Peter, who do you think the Flyers go with?
I'm going to take David Juracek. You know, both. I get the slight edge to Nemec because he's got better play within his own end. But basically, Ryan Ellis was injured for most of the season. You don't know what you're getting still with Rasmus Ristolainen. To have a right-hand shot in Juracek, be that guy for the future, I think you can't pass that up.
Any disagreement among the crew here? The only thing that I will say, just for a matter of discussion, and that's all this is a matter of discussion. You just wonder if this Philadelphia has needs ever. I think ultimately they need a defender. I think that's where they're going to go for the record. But where does a shooter like Joachim Kamel end up going? That's the only thing that I just say for the purposes of discussion. I don't know if Philadelphia would go that way, but when you can shoot the puck like he can, I don't even know if Seattle would even look at something like that too, but who knows?
They did draft even Samu Tuomala last year as well, and he was able to put the puck in the back of the net as well. So if they go and have that dynamic duo for the snipers, it does make sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the Columbus Blue Jackets, my team, are number six. And if I had to say anything right off the bat, I'd say Matt Savoy here because of the skill. They would look at the two defensemen if they were there, but with them both being gone, they've been really going skill. You put him with Kent Johnson and Patrick Laine, and you just get unbelievable fun. But Andrew, what do you say here for the Blue Jackets at six?
It's almost like you read my mind. I was actually like, I'd be hard pressed to pass on somebody like Kamel, like you mentioned, with him sitting there. I mean, his shooting ability is just incredible. What he can do with the puck is, you know, above none. But I think Matty Savoy I've been high on him. I think a lot of people have dropped him down a little bit in the first round there, but you know, size, skill up the middle. You know, what team wouldn't want a guy like that to bring him in and see what he offers? And again, I think he's gonna surprise a lot of people as he's dropped down. As I mentioned, he's gonna have the opportunity to kind of prove some people wrong. So
Matt and Peter, what do you guys think for the Blue Jackets?
I like the Savoy pick. I do. Savoy's just so. He's so good. I mean, the thing is that, you know, you add him to the system that the Blue Jacks already have, you know, with Cole Sillinger there and they need center depth. Like you've mentioned, Mark, throughout, Union Junction and they need center depth. They need centermen. So, I mean, and Savoy is, well, a centerman. So you add that and And he's going to be, like Andrew said, he's going to be a heck of a player. And who wouldn't want a guy like that on your team? And he has the same name as me, too. So that just adds to it.
It just adds to all the fun.
And also the Blue Jackets like to play a very heavy and physical game as well. Savoy doesn't play that all the time, but there were moments throughout the season where, despite the size, he can make a big hit. He can get into the corners. He can be, you know, a real tough guy to play against, you know. Yep. The Blue Jackets this season played that style and gave teams a lot of a good run for their money for most of the time. So I think he's going to thrive in that system.
And that's the point. Anyone that's watched Union Junction for a while, we've talked about center depth for a while. We've also talked about the need to play physical. And it was a very young D last year. Do they think about possibly looking at someone that has more size, since that they're a little undersized in spots? Mm. And that's where you wonder, is they have that second first round pick. We'll talk about them later. But do you look at the teammate like Connor Geeky, who does have the size? Something to think about. So let's talk about Ottawa, and that's number seven. We'll start with Matt on this one. They went Tyler Boucher last year, which I'm still shocked they did that.
Craziness.
But with that said, you know, we know who's off the board. We'll assume Savoy is the pick. Who does Ottawa go with?
Well, I made a really like in our mock draft and prospect corner, I picked a defenseman. I'm not going to do this here. I'm actually going to go and look at a bigger need of theirs is scoring wingers. And I'm going with Joaquin Kamel here on, I mean, like you guys mentioned already, his shooting ability. And, you know, he's dropped down rankings a bit, probably, you know, mostly because of his, where he's scoring his goals. He's scoring them in non-high danger areas. And, you know, and we had Tony Ferrari on, and he was mentioning that. So, I mean, I think I see why he's dropping a bit. But, you know, you see him there and he is a scorer. I mean, he does have a heck of a shot. He's a pure goal scorer, and Ottawa needs scoring in their system. So I'm going Kamel here for Ottawa.
Any objection by Peter or Andrew for that?
No, they're pretty weak on the right side. So aside from Drake Batherson and Connor Brown, even like prospects that they have in the system, it's not really that appealing. So to have someone like Kamel there really solidifies that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with all of that. Peter, the next team for Ottawa. Oh, what did I do with it? Did I close it?
I believe the next one is Detroit.
It is Detroit.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you for that. So go ahead. Who do you have for Detroit?
I want to go with what Devin said in our mock draft. He took Marco Casper, and that's a really surprising pick given what happened with Morris Seider. But I'm going to go a different route, and I'm going to surprise, and I'm going to say, well, not really surprise, but I'm going to say Brad Lambert. And think that, you know, he could play both center wing. He's got a lot of potential, but then again, what he had this season, low production, playing on a bad team. He has the hands, the size, the speed and the offensive awareness. It's just that is he able to find some sort of consistency? And I think with the organization like the Red Wings, where they already have two solid rookies in Raymond and Seider, I think they're going to do whatever they can to try and get the most out of him. So I don't think he's going to fall far because of his upside, and the Red Wings are going to take advantage of that.
Any thoughts from the other rankers on this?
I disagree. I would go Lucar Mackey here. I mean, you know, again, they need center depth as well. I mean, I don't know. And he's Swedish too. I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
They love their Swedes. And I don't know if they'd pass up Lucar Mackey if he's there.
I wanted to create some conversation as well, because at the same time, everything was going according to plan for what my final rankings was going to be like. So I wanted to throw a bit of a wrench in there.
So the only question I'll throw to the crew, Cutter Gauthier, would they look at something like that there? I mean, just somebody who, I think there's a lot of teams out there that think that he can go pretty high in this draft. And if he's available at 8, I know there's other needs, but boy, that's a good player right there.
Really is.
Yeah.
Andrew, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, I think I know they've got like more cider as well, but Korchinski would kind of cross my mind as well, just because, I mean, yeah, you've got your horse and cider, but it wouldn't hurt to have that, that second
extra
second defenseman back there as well.
Yeah. If we're doing that, we'll go to Miniukov then right up the road to Saginaw for them. They that they probably have seen a lot of. Little bit heavier, very much an offensive defenseman. So they have a lot of options. So even though they're at eight, Detroit has plenty of options to pick from, which is certainly good for them. So the next team on the list, we'll start with Andrew, the Buffalo Sabres.
I think it's fair to say with him left on the board, Lekkerimäki is going to go to Buffalo. You know, obviously with a guy like Jack Eichel out of the picture now, there's a lot of potential for depth up the middle, and you know what he's able to offer is something that this rebuilding franchise is going to need in a couple of years. They got their own power. They have their defensemen. I wasn't huge on that pick last year, but I can see now that they've got opportunity as well in this draft, and I think Lekkerimäki can add a lot of. A lot of future bonuses to this this Sabres team.
Any objection from the other guys?
No.
Okay. All in and then some. All right, Matt, the Anaheim Ducks at 10th.
Well, this is where Cutter Gauthier, I'm going with him here.
Yes.
You know, the thing is they got some centermen. They do have good centers. Cutter Gauthier is a centerman, right? So,
Left wing.
So never mind. So now, you know, they have great center depth. So I don't think they need to go center. They can go now beef up their wings because they do need some wingers. And Gauthier definitely would add a lot to their team. And so, Gauthier for me for Anaheim.
Any other possibilities? I'll give you guys one. Danilo Yurov is somebody that would be really, I think he's borderline top 10 for me. At least in my own opinion, you want to talk about an impact winger, depending on which side you want to fill. And if you got Zegras there already, you got the centers are pretty good. It's just a thought. Peter, we'll go with San Jose Sharks at number 11.
I'm going with Pavel Mentyukov. You don't know what the situation is going to hold for Brent Burns or Erik Karlsson at this point. Might as well get a really solid offensively minded defenseman, but has the awareness and has the work ethic, and he's been working on his defensive game all season, and he's improved tremendously in that regard. So he's great on the rush, but he's learning to play a very steady game as well in his own end, and I think that's what you need nowadays. You can't just be run and gun. You got to learn how to play the position, and Mentyukov is putting the work ethic in there. So I think, you know, obviously maybe you would like a right hand D, but I think Mentyukov is going to be really great for the Sharks.
And Korchinski is the other guy I think about in that spot too. But any other options on the Sharks? We'll go back to the Columbus Blue Jackets at 12th, second first round pick. Boy, oh boy! I know in the mock draft, if anyone saw that, I went off, kind of off the board and took Ivan Miroshenko.
Yeah.
And I thought that he was the best available player still in that spot. We know very well what his situation is. And when you have a second first round pick and you start to go later in the first round, why not take a lottery ticket on a player that could potentially be a top 10 pick in most other years, assuming health, assuming normalcy. They could go Brad Lambert there if they wanted to. You want to talk about Jarmo Kekäläinen being in Finland and maybe he knows something else. That's an interesting pick, though, because of the second one. If maybe teams will call up who aren't in the first round, want to jump in and are out willing to trade a good player.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. What do you guys think? Where should the Blue Jackets go, assuming they pick a center at number 6?
I'm just going to go. Well, first off, you're putting all the pressure on me on this Union Junction here because you got me picking for Columbus. But I actually like Yurov. I think he's got the size right now. He's got the speed to keep up with that team. That team's so young. It's so fast. It's going to be a high-paced environment in give it 2 years. And the potential there, that like so highly skilled. And again, there's some scouts out there that are a little down on Yurov, and I've never really understood why. I think what he brings is going to be, he's just, his ceiling's so high. Right. And I think, you know, with obviously, the history of picking Chinakov as well, you know, there is some potential there for, to see that pick kind of go Columbus's way again.
Yeah. And just a little word of advice about Columbus. They don't care about Matt's list. They don't care about Peter's list. They don't care about Andrew's list. They don't give a crap about anybody's list. They go off their own.
Yeah.
And they could pick somebody that we're not even talking about and completely within the range for them. Now, Matt, we're going to skip you because Vancouver's at 15th. We're going to save them for you. So, Peter, 13, we'll go to you for the New York Islanders.
Yeah. I am going to go with Isaac Howard. Kind of similar play style, although Matt Barzal is a centerman, but he plays that quick style, that possession game, very tenacious, and he's just all over the ice. I mean, I think if you pair him up with Matt Barzal, you're going to not only going to have to worry about him, you're going to have to worry about Isaac Howard because he just uses every inch in the offensive zone. And, you know, the U18s was a perfect example with that, with his first game against Canada, and he just dominated, cutting to the middle of the ice. And that high danger area, that's where you want to be. And he's got the speed, he's got the drive, he's got the hands, and he's definitely got the shot to bury the puck. So if they want to go another route, or want to go that route to add some more dynamic scoring, I'm going to pick Isaac Howard.
All right, we'll quickly wrap it up here. Just two more. Andrew, 15, the Vancouver Canucks. I'm sorry. We're going to, I Winnipeg Jets 14. We're going to say Vancouver for Matt. I said that already.
I'm going to go Liam Ohlgren. I just think, great in the offensive zone. There's some unknownness with what's going to happen with Winnipeg. A couple of their centers, there's been talks about whether Scheifele wants to return. There's been talks about, I can't even think of it. There's been just a lot of speculation around what's going to happen with the forwards in Winnipeg over the next year. So I think this gives them potential. This kid's 6'1", 187 pounds. Really high quality offensive instincts. He has some holes on the back end, but I think that's something that you can work on with his development. You've got a pretty solid defensive core in Winnipeg that you should be able to focus more on trying to get some offensive input. And I think he's the perfect player to take at that point.
All right, Matt, now we're finally to the Vancouver Canucks. What say you at 15?
Oh, this one's gone a different way. So now I've got an interesting pick. I went Denton Mateychuk in our mock draft, but this guy wasn't available. So I'm going Kevin Korchinski on this one. For Vancouver, because he's the more well-rounded defenseman. He's got offensive upside. He's really good defensively. He is a left-hand shot. The Canucks need right-hand shots, although Mateychuk's not a right-hand shot either. So, but he's just got so much more of a well-rounded game, because if he's there, I go him over Mateychuk. And everyone, you know, people say the Canucks need forwards too, but they need defense as well beyond Quinn Hughes, because really they don't have anyone in their system that's top four potential. Jack Rathbone, maybe. I mean, he could definitely get there. But, you know, if Korchinski's there at 15, a Canucks, I go Korchinski for sure.
Mm. And the last team is Buffalo. And I think the interesting part now at 16, it's their second first-round pick. There's a lot of centers that are potentially available there. I haven't heard Connor Geeky's name yet. Luca Del Bell Blues, who plays in Mississauga in the OHL. Owen Beck's another one, teammate. David Goyette is somebody who jumped up big time in the final rankings on Central Scouting. Frank Nazar is somebody a little bit further down that I think that a lot in the scouting world believe in him. Rucker McGoarty is a winger, somebody that, you know, Peter mentioned earlier. That could go a lot of different ways.
So by then,
it takes a big wild card.
Yeah, this is definitely where things are going to get interesting.
And that's why your fans should be watching the combine, start to get some of the trends. And then, you know, we're just a little more than a month away from the NHL draft. I cannot thank these three enough, Matt Zader, Peter Barrichini, and Andrew Forbes. They are our rankers at the Hockey Writers. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and joining us in Union Junction. We're going to do this next week. We're going to have a post-combine episode, and we're going to talk about takeaways. But you know, for now, thank you so much for taking your time to join the show.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mark.
Yeah, and fans, sure. Next week, like I said, we'll be back here at Union Junction. We're going to do post-combine. We'll talk about all of our takeaways. Maybe we'll start to get some trends. And said a little more than a month away here from the actual NHL draft. So that Friday, you're going to see top prospects will talk at the combine. And then all day Saturday, it's going to start 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And it's going to go all the way through till the middle of the afternoon, where prospects are going to do their fitness testing. They're going to talk to the media, and we'll be there for every minute of it. So make sure you follow us. Meantime, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy your week. Enjoy the playoffs. And we'll see you next time here on Union Junction.